For spiritual seekers of many stripes, people are looking to climb to the top of the ladder right away. People are looking to get to the peak of the mountain all at once without taking the various steps that are necessary to get there. In this year, we're going to go through the third section of chapter 4 in the Sefer HaMashpir of Rosh Hashanah Chaim Kesselman, which discusses the life and the teachings of Rosh Hashanah Chaim Kesselman, one of the greatest Chabad Mashpim in the 20th century. And the subject of this chapter is his Beinonus, is contemplation before and during Tefillah. The subsection discusses five different steps, five different ranks of his Beinonus, going from the lowest rank to the highest rank. Rosh Hashanah Chaim would often say a story on the Harav HaTzadik of Hillel Miparich. Hillel Miparich was a great Chabad Chassid who is most known for being one of the chief disciples of the Tzemach Tzadik. So apparently, Rav Hillel Miparich had a shever. He had something in his body was broken. I'm not sure if it was a broken back or it was a broken bone. And people asked Rav Hillel, how is it that you ended up with this broken limb in your body? After all, Rav Hillel spent most of his life engaged in learning Torah and Tefillah. So how is it that he has a broken bone or a broken back? Isn't that generally something that people who engage in carrying heavy objects ultimately suffer from? So Rav Hillel responded, even somebody who is engaged in Avodas Hashem runs the risk of falling, tripping, and hurting themselves. He said, when a person contemplates during davening on Hashem's greatness, a person has to hold themselves back in order that their feelings of love and fear towards Hashem, in order that their tremendous religious emotions not break out in a revealed way. So everybody shouldn't see that everyone else, not see them going into ecstasy. And as a result of his tremendous effort to make sure that he wouldn't go into ecstasy around other people in the process of davening, this intense emotional inner work that he was doing caused him to have, apparently, some physical challenges. It left a physical impact on his body. Bechlal, Chassidus Chabad tells us to stay far away from chitzonius. Chitzonius is superficial expression of the self. And instead of engaging in chitzonius, a person should ground themselves on foundations of pnimius, interiority, and truth. Meaning to say, don't engage in a lot of showmanship, of showing what a big davener you are, of shuckling very hard during davening. Focus on authenticity and inner work. But on the other hand, even though there's an importance of authenticity, a person shouldn't allow the necessity for authenticity to allow himself to become a perfectionist and thereby not to engage in Aveda. So given that there's this dialectic, given that there's this dichotomy between, on the one hand, the pnimius, and on the other hand, not allowing that demand or that drive for pnimius to keep one away from actually engaging in Aveda, it's an art of understanding what one should engage in and what one should not engage in. One of the unique features of Rosh Hashanah Chaim, which contrasted him from other Chabad Mashpiyim in his era, is that he was an amazing coach. He was an amazing educator. The Friedrich Rebbe has a contra called Klolia Chinuch Vadracha, and there he explains that proper chinuch takes place with Hadracha Pnimis, meaning that the educator understands where the student is at, and the educator, therefore, tells the student, where you're at now, this is the Avodah, this is the learning that's appropriate for you. Instead of just throwing the student off the deep end and expecting that they're going to become a gadol. It's like many yeshivas, student shows up first day, and there's an expectation that you'll sit and learn all day, and you'll sit and learn be'iyun all day, from 7 in the morning till 2 a.m., and there isn't an understanding of where the student is holding. And very often, that leads to phenomenon such as students being less productive than they could be, accomplishing less than they should accomplish, and ultimately leading very often to burnout and to students not sticking with the theory they were very involved with while they were in yeshiva. But the premise goes that if education is given in such a way that students will be able to connect to it and they climb up a ladder slowly but surely, then they'll succeed, then they'll be okay. This is very related to a vart from the Rosh Yeshiva of Moshe Lichtenstein, ironically, who says in the Pasuk, at the end of the Parashat Yisrei, Lisalib malis al mizbechi, asher lo tigala ervosha olav. A person should not walk up on steps upon the mizbech. And the reason, and one should rather go up on a ramp, The reason being that if one goes on steps, then they might come to reveal their nakedness, the pasuk says. So Mezal Tzitzit explained as follows. Le'salab malas al-mizbachi means don't jump in your avodas Hashem. Don't go from step to step in a way of discontinuity. Because if you go in a way that's discontinuous, it's very likely that you'll trip and that your weaknesses will be exposed. Whereas, if somebody works in avodas Hashem in a much more gradual way, in a way that's appropriate for them, then they're more likely to be successful. And in terms of chassidus, this is called the avodah of milmata lemaila, from above to below. You climb from where you're at to a higher level. This idea of avodah b'seidah v'adraga, of going up a ladder, of going from step to step, is true in all areas of chinuch. But it's certainly the case when it comes to avodas tefillah, when it comes to the inner work of davening, of which the pasuk tells us that tefillah is a sulam mutzav arza v'reishi magia hashemayim. It's a ladder which is grounded on earth, but its head reaches the heavens. It's an aveda which is all about going up. It's all about ascent, and therefore, one's progress needs to be very, very slow. And that's true in particular for even the izbeinus and the preparation before davening that needs to go in a manner of seder v'adraga in order and rank. This idea of different ranks and different steps in the avodas tefillah was one of the things that Rav Shlomo Chaim focused on very much. And he would try to tailor appropriate modes of his bainus, which are appropriate to each of his students, according to where his student was holding spiritually. So now that we've said that there are a bunch of ranks, there are a bunch of steps along the path, along the ladder of his bainus, let's go through them. And this chapter discusses five different ranks, five different steps upon the path of his bainus. The very first is his bainus ba'oisius haraf, contemplating on the words of the Rebbe's Maimer. Rechaim Shalom Daitch says that the very first level of Hizbeinus that Rav Shlomo Chaim Kesselman would teach was Hizbeinus by Sisirav, meaning to contemplate on a parak of Tanya or in a particular Maimer of Chassidus by thinking through the text, thinking through what was said in the parak or in the Maimer. But at the time when a person is engaging in Hizbeinus, a person doesn't only think of the words. The person doesn't think about the fact, say, that when a person contemplates and thinks very deeply about how the fact that Hashem fills all worlds and transcends all worlds and all before Him is as if it's nothing, but rather, a person can't just think the words, but they rather need to think about the content of the words. They need to imagine what these things mean. And a person needs to put an effort to bring those things close to himself and bring them down into his personal world. Rav Yeshua Munshine remembers that Rav Shlomo Chaim would say that his bainus needs to be, imagine yourself explaining the idea in Chassidus to somebody who's a smart person, but is not yet acquainted with the idea in Chassidus. Someone who's intelligent but is not yet familiar with the world of Hasidus. And you need to explain every detail to the person very well until they understand the idea well. Getting this level, getting to this rank of this Bainus Beis Rav, is not something that you do overnight, but it takes, there are many steps. First, you contemplate on the words, this parak of Tanya, or the words of the Maimer, which at this point you've memorized for 5 minutes. Then you contemplate on it for 10 minutes, and so on and so forth. Until over time, you're able to contemplate at great length and with great depth. Rav Shlomo Chaim would explain that davening is a process of a soul connection and an emotional connection of the neshama and Hashem. And therefore, the preparation of this connection is contemplation on Hashem's greatness. And when we're speaking about such emotional and soul things like this, what matters is not how much time you invest, but rather it's about your inner psychological orientation. But nonetheless, even though it's about quality and it's about a relationship and it's not about quantity, Rav Shlomo Chaim would very often measure how much time people were engaging in his bainus. He said we need to have a concrete benchmark. So how much time are you being his bainus? At first glance, it would seem that contemplating for a period of 5 minutes is not a big deal. But it's not the case. Rav Fitch often, Rav Yitzchak often would explain that to focus on one idea for 5 minutes continuously is a very hard thing to do. Because a person needs to become one with the idea without thinking. It's usually much easier to learn together with a chavrusa than to learn on your own, because when you're speaking to another person, you're able to focus on the topic which you're studying and not to get distracted and move on to this thing or that thing. Whereas when you're engaged in your own thoughts, thought is much harder to focus. So it takes a lot of training to train oneself to focus on one idea for a period of time continuously. Yerushalayim Chaim would tell the young Bachrim to keep a watch by their spot in the Beis Medrash, and they would use the watch to measure how much time they were able to contemplate without any intrusive thoughts. So they'd sit, they'd close their eyes, and they tried to think through a parak of Tanya, they tried to think through a maimer, some idea of Ein Hashem, and then an intrusive thought would pop in, and they'd be able to see how much time had elapsed that they were able to think in a focused way before the intrusive thought dropped in. And this is apparently a very challenging thing to do, to keep oneself focused for 5 minutes. And then after they graduated from the 5 minute benchmark, they move on to the 10 minute benchmark, and then so on and so forth. Chaim Shalom Deitch says that he heard from Rav Meir Tzvi Gruzman that the Bachrim would measure how much time they were able, they would self-report how much time they were able to engage in his bainus and his contemplation. And he said that the longest amount of time a Bachar was able to contemplate continuously, he self-reported, was an hour and a half. The Bachar at the time in Shivas Kfar Chabad, where Yerushalayim Chaim taught, would say that through his Bainus, a person changes into a different type of human being. Here, the Bachar were riffing on a very famous ancient taxonomy, which finds its way into Jewish medieval philosophy and into Chassidus Chabad, which distinguishes between four different classes of beings. There's the mineral, doimim, like say salt, rocks, tzimeach, the vegetative, like plants, chai, animals, and finally medaber, which refers to humans, but medaber literally means the speaking entity. So the Bachram would joke that through his bainus, a person transformed themselves from a medaber to a higher sort of being called the choshev, the thinker. Now, even though his bainus b'yitzias harav would seem to be not a very creative exercise, you're just taking the words of the Rebbe in Tanya, or taking the words of the Rebbe in a maimer, and thinking through the words, vividly thinking through what the words mean, Yerushalayim Chaim would say that Bachrim, even at this early stage, should engage in extracting a bechein. A bechein means a practical lesson. What does this parak in Tanya mean to me? What does this maimer mean to me? What Yerushalayim Chaim's talmidim would relate that Yerushalayim Chaim said that everybody needs to extract a takeaway, a practical takeaway, from whatever parak of Tanya they're learning. For example, if they're learning parak Aleph of Tanya, they know that a person has a nefesh b'hamis, from which flow all of the negative evil taivas, all of one's lusts and all of one's negative character traits. And even if a person naturally also has good character traits, those natural good character traits come from the nefesh b'hamis. Let's say that you're naturally a nice person. You didn't put in any effort to be a nice person, a giving person. That also comes from animal soul. Just that the impulsive way that you're created is you're a person whose impulse is to be nice. And that means that perhaps at times your impulse to be nice won't be the right thing. Maybe you'll be nice to people who don't deserve your niceness. So the bechein, the takeaway from, or one possible takeaway from Perek Aleph of Tanya is, a person should contemplate and ask himself, why is it that all the things which flow from the Nefesh B'Hamis, let's say my niceness or my laziness, my compulsiveness, whatever it might be, why is it that all the things which flow from the Nefesh B'Hamis live with me in a revealed and clear way, whereas the things which come from my Nefesh Alikis, my divine soul, like passion for Hashem and awe for Hashem, are not by me in a revealed way and in a perfect way? Yerushalayim Chaim wouldn't only apply this Bechein when it came to easier parts of Chassidus like Tanya, but he would even apply trying to extract the Bechein, trying to extract a concrete takeaway when it came to topics in pure Haskalah, meaning the more abstract philosophical parts of Chassidus. For example, when the Talmidim learned Hemshech Hashana Tavshin Gimel, which is a Hemshech, a series of memoriam of the Friedrich Rebbe from the year 1942, which is really based on the Rebbe Rashab's Hemshech Hashana Tofresh Samach Hei from the year 1904, which is a very, very profound Hemshech, which talks about the human psyche and applies the human psyche to the divine psyche, or says that By touching certain aspects of the human psyche, we're able to arouse certain parts of the divine psyche. And there, one of the abstract ideas that the Hemshech begins with is three different levels, three different sorts of will, of desire that a psyche can have. I mean, here it's talking about the divine psyche, about Hashem's consciousness. And in the Hemshech, Tafshin Gimel / Tafer Savachay, the Friedrich Rebbe / the Rebbe Shab, goes through three different ranks in the psyche. There's the Ratzon HaGoli. Ratzon HaGoli is that I actively desire something. Let's say that I want a house, so I'm now on the market for a house, right? But it's something that I very clearly want. I would like to buy a house right now, and I'm going to try and marshal whatever resources that are available to me to buy that house. Then there's something which is a little bit deeper in the psyche, and that's called Ratzon HaNe'elam. It's hidden inside of my consciousness. It's something that I want and something that might be bubbling underneath, and it's something which might be motivating my actions, but I'm not necessarily consciously aware of it. And then there is an even deeper desire than that, and that is Ratzon HaMuchlat, an absolute will. And the example of an absolute will that the Friedrich Rebbe gives there in Tafshin Gimel is the Ratzon Lius Leibayis, getting back to the idea of a house, that every human being desires a house. The Gemara tells us, the Chazal tells us rather, that Kol Misha in Leibayis, in a Odom, whoever doesn't have a home is not a person. So it means not necessarily just a place to live, but a place you can call home, a place you can feel comfortable in, a place which you can call your own. And even if somebody will never achieve that desire, there's some people who end up homeless. Nonetheless, the Friedrich Rebbe / Rebbe Shab tell us that this desire to have a home is a Ratzon HaMuchlat. It's an absolute will in one's consciousness, which is there from the moment one is born and the moment that one dies, even if one is not necessarily aware of it and it's not even necessarily directly influencing one's actions. Another example of Ratzon HaMuchlat would be the desire to be in a romantic relationship, to have a stable romantic relationship with another individual. But whatever the case may be, so there, Tafshin Gimel and Tafer Samachay, the Rebbeim are telling us about these very abstract levels of Ratzon which exist in the human consciousness and, by extension, in the divine consciousness. And Avdol Vdoldor and Ishurim on Hemshech Tafer Samachay explain that when we say that there are these levels in the divine consciousness, it doesn't necessarily mean that, absolutely speaking, these levels exist. And because, absolutely speaking, the divine is a one. It can't be expressed in levels of consciousness. But since Hashem does reveal himself to us in a model of consciousness, in the context of that model, these madrigas of Ratzon HaMuchlat, Ratzon HaNe'elam, and Ratzon HaGoli are all relevant. So this is definitely something of an abstract aside, and something that we'll, God willing, get into greater detail in Shurim on Hemshech Tafshin Gimel and Tafer Samachay. But the point being that even for such abstract ideas like these levels of Ritzainis, Shlomo Chaim said that it's very important to take away a Bechein, to take away a concrete lesson from what it is that you're learning. And here, Shlomo Chaim said that these different Madrigas and Ratzon come to show us how much it is, how deeply it touches the divine consciousness, how deeply it touches the Kodesh Baruch Hu, that he have a world, that there be a world here, and that Hashem manifests in this world. It's not a Ratzon HaGoli. It's not a Ratzon HaNe'elam. But rather, it's a Ratzon HaMuchlat. It's the deepest sort of will that one could have. And by looking at these examples in human consciousness of the deepest psychological needs that we have, we can understand how it is in the divine consciousness, having a world in which Hashem can manifest himself, is kivyochol the deepest psychological need. And when we contemplate on this, we come to the conclusion that our avoda, our service of Hashem, really matters to Him in the deepest possible way. Not only is it the case that it matters to Hashem on the level of His Ratzon Goli, His manifest will, but even at the level of Ratzon HaMuchlat, the deepest desire of His consciousness. Meaning to say that at the deepest levels of a divine consciousness, it matters to Hashem that I serve Hashem and I not go ahead and follow my base desires. So not following one's base desires, not because you want to be a tzaddik, you want to reach some spiritual rank, and not so that you can achieve dveikus, that you can achieve an experience of connection with the divine light, but rather it's because you are Hashem's servant, you're serving Hashem, you care about what Hashem wants. And following this, following mitzvahs is ultimately not for you, but rather it's for Hashem. And as the famous Chabad Mashpir of Manas Friedman likes to say, and his disciple, Rav Yoni Katz, likes to share amongst the Talmidim in Kriyat Menachem and all around Olam HaLubavitch, Hashem needs your mitzvahs. Hashem cares about your mitzvahs. So we see that Rishon LeChaim said it isn't sufficient to just focus on the profound psychology or the profound philosophy of Hasidus, but instead one needs to contemplate on what's the takeaway, what do I learn from the idea in this Maimon Hasidus. There's another concept talked a lot about in Hasidus, which says, Teferes de'ima na'ase keser lezo, that the Teferes of the Divine Mother becomes the crown of the small face. So what does this mean? So the Alter Rebbe in Likut HaTorah explains as follows, that ima refers to bina. Ima refers to our analytic capacity, and within that analytic capacity, the analytic capacity itself is made up of 10 spheres. The sphere of Teferis, among other things, refers to the compromise, it refers to the resolution of the inner conflict between Chesed and Gevura, the inner conflict between the desire to give and the desire to hold back. And these desires, these polarities, play out in a lot of different ways. But the idea being that before an emotion emerges, there is an inner rational calculus which takes place, and we may not necessarily be aware of the calculus. But for example, let's say you have a cow, and the cow seems very happy when it's fed sweet grass, and it seems very upset when it starts making faces when it's fed food that's sour. So the cow is having some sort of response, and there is a rational calculus behind that response, meaning the cow desires, the cow likes that which is sweet and does not like that which is sour. And there's a rational calculus which grounds how it is that the cow ultimately gets to conclusion, even if it's the case that the cow is not necessarily conscious of that rational calculus. So getting back to this idea that Teferes de'ima means that there is a resolution in the inner rational calculus of how one should relate to a certain person or how one should relate to a certain phenomenon. And then that becomes keser l'za. That informs za, which are the expressed emotions and instincts. So that's this Kabbalistic idea. Now, the question is, how do we understand that in our spiritual worship? So Shlomo Chaim would explain it very simply. He'd say that Teferes de'ima refers to the pe'er shel havana. The better you understand some idea generates stronger or more beautiful religious emotions towards Hashem. Now, since we're talking about Hizbeinunus and taking away a Bechein from this Hizbeinunus, Rosh Hashanah Chaim has told me them said, it's very common that when one is being Hizbeinun in Chabad, one will sing a contemplative nigun. So Rosh Hashanah Chaim apparently taught that when one is engaging in the act of Hizbeinunus, one should not sing nigunim because that might disturb one's Hizbeinunus. Instead, one should try to be completely one with the idea on which they're contemplating. And only after they've completed that, when they come to a Bechein, when they come to a takeaway from this Hizbeinunus, then they should go ahead and sing a nigun. So that's all for the first level of Hizbeinunus, which we said is Hizbeinunus b'Yitzchus Harav, thinking through the letters, thinking through the ideas that the Rebbe said either in Tanya or Maimorim, but also extracting a Bechein, also extracting some practical takeaway. The next level, the next step upon the ladder of Hizbeinunus, which Shlomo Chaim would teach his Talmidim to go upon, is Hizbeinunus b'Tuchen HaMaimer, contemplating on the content, contemplating on what's going on in the Maimer, the ideas behind the words of the Maimer. And that means saying over the Maimer to yourself in your own words, meaning to say, thinking over the idea in your own words, and not merely saying over what the Rebbe said. At this stage, a person should try and think through the maimer in the way that you'd explain the maimer to somebody else, the way that you'd explain it to a chavrusa. But the general path that you're following is according to the way that the concepts appear in the maimer in the Perek Tanya. Rav Yaakov Yitzchak Holtzberg explained that when Rav Shlomo Chaim would guide him on his bimnus on the content of a maimer, which would go through Hashem's greatness with respect to various types of animals and plants and minerals, Rav Shlomo Chaim would tell him to contemplate through the maimer in a way that he'd imagine himself saying over the maimer to somebody who has difficulty understanding abstract ideas. And the person asks him questions in the maimer. Then you imagine yourself saying over the idea to the person, answering the various questions that one might ask on the maimer until the person would understand the idea very well. Generally speaking, Rav Shlomo Chaim would say that the first stage of contemplation, meaning contemplating through the Ois Yisarav, generally matches up with what we call the Shiva Ketana, or high school, the ages generally of 14 to 17, 14 to 18, and only when somebody reaches Yeshiva Gedolah, when somebody reaches the age of 18, when they're more of a mature adult, should they begin contemplating through the Toichen of the Maimer, the content of the Maimer, and not only the Isis. That said, of course, if somebody's starting later in life, somebody's not going through the Chabad system, presumably one should start out with the Ois Yisarav, and only after they've trained themselves to learn the Ois Yisarav should they go to the Teichen HaMaimer, should they go to the Kant of the Maimer. Of course, though, if you're doing this independently, if you're doing it at your own pace, it could be that if you're a more mature individual, you'll be able to do this more quickly. Getting back to Hemshach Hashanah Tov Shin Gimel, which we touched upon earlier in this year, so when the Bachram would learn Hemshech Tov Shin Gimel in Yeshiva, Rav Shlomo Chaim would tell Talmidim they should contemplate on the content of this Hemshech. But that said, he wouldn't always tell the Bachram to focus on whatever they're learning in Yeshiva. But rather, very often Rav Shlomo Chaim, as we said in the last year, would tell people to contemplate on the same Maimer, on the same idea for day after day, week after week, month after month. For example, he'd tell them to contemplate on the idea of Achdus Hashem, of Hashem being the only true existence and the only thing that truly exists, until that would become etched into a Bachar's heart and mind. Very often, Rav Shlomo Chaim would tell Bachrim to contemplate on Maimorim from the Rebbe Shabbos first Sefer Maimorim, which is Sefer Maimorim Tof Reish Mem Gimel, the Maimorim that the Rebbe Shabbos said in his first year as Rebbe, his first year after his father's passing, after the passing of the Maharash, which corresponds to the years 1982 and 1983. And among them were the Maimer Tonu Rabbanon Mitzvah Ner Chanukah, which is a standalone Maimer for, of course, Chanukah, and as well as the Maimorim of Rav Brechia Pasach L'chol Havaya Gdula, and the Maimer HaUmnam Yoshev Elikim, which are the first two Maimorim of a three Maimer Hemshech there as well, in Sefer Maimorim Tov Reish Mem Gimel. And these Maimorim talk about the idea of Achdus Hashem at greater length. There was once a Balcher who wanted to contemplate an idea of Merabu Masech Hashem, how wonderful are your works, Hashem. And Rav Shlomo Chaim told this Balcher to contemplate on the Maimer Shabbach Yerushalayim as Hashem from the year Tov Reish Chav Zayin, a Maimer of the Rebbe Maharash, a Maimer of the fourth Lubavitch Rebbe. And then there were some Talmidim who Rav Shlomo Chaim said they should contemplate on the famous Maimer Mikamicha Tafresh Chavtes, also a Maimer the Merash, the fourth Lubavitch Rebbe, which deals with the idea of Bitul Ha'ilamas Lalikus, with the nullification of the worlds to divinity, to Hashem. Rav Chaim Shalom Deitch notes that there were another three Maimorim that Rav Shlomo Chaim would very often tell people to learn, and those were the Maimer of Shuva Yisrael, which is the third Maimer in the Rebbe Rashab's Sefer Maimorim Ranat Tafresh Nun Tes, which is known as a very avoidedic Maimer, a very emotional Maimer, and if you really connect with the Maimer there, it's very, very powerful stuff. And then as well, Rav Shlomo Chaim would tell the Bochrim to learn the second two Maimorim in Hemshech Ether of the Rebbe Rashab, and Ether corresponds to the year 1909-1910. These Maimorim were said around the Roshono of 1910, the Maimer L'cha Amar Libi, the second Maimer which was said on the second day of Rosh Hashanah, as well as the Maimer of Acha Sha'alti Eter, which was said on Shabbos Shuva of that year. So those two Maimorim, Shuva Renat, and L'cha Amar Libi and Acha Sha'alti Eter, Rosh Hashanah would tell people to be misbunden on. However, Avram Alter Heber says that Bechlau, generally speaking, Rav Shlomo Chaim was very into telling Bochum to learn the Maram of Ether, because Rav Shlomo Chaim held that this concept discussed in Ether, like Koyach HaPoel B'Nifal, the idea that Hashem's power is constantly invested in this world, and the Maimer of, or rather the idea of Memalikul Almin, divine immanence, are explained very well in the Hemshech. Even when it came to contemplating on the Tuchin of the Maimer, on the contents of a Maimer, Rav Shlomo Chaim would tell the Bochrim to contemplate in a stepwise manner, little by little. First, he'd tell them to contemplate on the content of a few lines of the Maimer. And afterwards, after they had gotten used to that, he would tell them to contemplate on one or two Se'ifim, on one or two paragraphs, sections of the Maimer, and then he would have them add more and more until they were finally capable of contemplating on an entire Maimer. And that's often a challenging task because a Maimer of, say, the Rebbe Rashab can run 10 to 20 pages. Very often, Rav Shlomo Chaim would tell Bochrim to first learn the Maimer Baal Peh, to first learn the Maimer by heart, and only then would they be best able to contemplate through the entire Tichon of the Maimer, through the entire content of the Maimer. One of his Talmidim, Rav Nachum Kaplan, relates that Rav Shlomo Chaim once had Rav Nachum learn over the whole Maimer of Ani Yeshena Tovshin Tes of the Friedrich Rebbe, Baal Peh. And after that, he was able to contemplate on the Maimer before davening. Rav Chaim Shalom Deitch relates that once, when Rav Shlomo Chaim was telling him over the idea of his Bainanus, he said that when the Friedrich Rebbe, when the sixth Rebbe Lubavitch would go into the Rebbe Rashab to review Maimarim that the Rebbe Rashab had said, first, the Friedrich Rebbe would say it over as he had heard it from the Rebbe Rashab. And then the Rebbe Rashab would tell the Friedrich Rebbe, "Nu, in Egin Oisius, say the Maimer over to me in your own words." Meaning to say, let's see how you received the Maimer and how you say the idea over in your own understanding. The idea being that after somebody has said over a Maimer in the words of the Rav, a person needs to internalize what it is they've learned. They shouldn't just say it over, but they should really connect with what it is they've learned. Now, there is an idea of saying over Oisi Sarav, Baal Peh, and Rav Shlomo Chaim was into that only in the context of saying Tanya Baal Peh. Given the holiness of the letters of Tanya, when it comes to given in that it's the Torah Shebichsav of Chassidus. But when it came to Maimarim of the Rabbein, Shlomo Chaim would say not to memorize Maimarim word by word, but rather in general to just memorize their content, to commit their content to memory in a Bachar's own words. And one could think that saying over a Maimer, Baal Peh, saying over a Maimer in the Rebbe's words is a very holy thing. The challenge is, and the Rebbe even alludes to this in the back of the Kut Sichas Chelek Beis, that saying over something, saying over a Maimer in Yisias Harav is very, very challenging. Because let's say, for example, the Rebbe Rashab's Hemshech Samech Vav runs over 700 pages, and Maimari Chassidus tend to be particularly long and voluminous. Say the Mitl Rebbe Shara Muna runs 69 chapters. If a person were to try to memorize those Maimarim, they wouldn't cover as much ground, that's one. And two, a second flaw, which Shlomo Chaim saw in just memorizing the words, is that if you're memorizing the words, you're not internalizing, you're not connecting as deeply with the ideas. There was another famous Mashpia in Lubavitch, who was the chief Mashpia in Brunois, the Chabad Yeshiva in France, named Rav Nissen Nemanov. And Rav Nissen was Rav Shlomo Chaim's younger contemporary. They taught together briefly in Brnois, but ultimately Rav Shlomo Chaim went to Kfar Chabad, Rav Nissen stayed in Brnois, and they were known to be very different. Rav Nissen's kav was known to be more the kav, more the line, the spiritual path of Kabbalah's oil. He was all about extreme, extreme discipline and asceticism, whereas Rav Shlomo Chaim was more known for developing Bachrim where they were at, where they were holding. And the distinction in the way that they related to Maimarim really brings out the distinction of their personalities. Rav Nissen was known to say over every Maimer ois ba ois, to say over every Maimer word by word. He would put a lot of effort into memorizing Maimarim of the Rebbeim word for word. So somebody once shared this fact with the Friedrich Rebbe, and the Friedrich Rebbe asked this and why he does this, and Nissen said he felt that it helped his kashrus, his connection to the Rebbe. However, Rav Shlomo Chaim had a different path. Rav Shlomo Chaim said that one should focus on the content of the Maimer in order to more deeply internalize what the Maimer is saying. So that's that for the second Madrega, the second rank, the second path of his Bainanus, which is contemplating on the content of the Maimer. The third rank on the ladder of Hezbonus, the third step on the ladder of Hezbonus, is Hezbonus Benusim Lukot Mekama Maimar, contemplating on an idea which is gathered together from many Maimar. So this, for example, would be, let's say, taking the idea of the Sugya of Ishavos Yesh Me'ayin, the coming into being of reality from non-being to being. Or the idea of Ani Avaya Leishanisi, that there's no change in divinity even though Hashem created the world. And then, so you think about the idea, let's say, Ishavos Yesh Me'ayin or Ani Avaya Leishanisi, and you think about how the idea comes up in various Maimarim all throughout the corpus of Chassidus Chabad, and you put together the various details and put them into your own unique picture of one long contemplative exercise, of one long Hezbonus. And if one performs Hezbonus in this manner, then it's quite possible that one will end up engaging in Hezbonus for a very, very long time and in a very, very deep way. Shlomo Chaim once told a story that there was a certain Chassid who was traveling from town to town, Chassid of the Tzemach Tzedek, and he ended up by a certain Sheikhid's house. And Sheikhid asked him, "Do you need anything in the morning before I go to work?" And the Chassid's like, "No, I only need a cup of tea." So the Sheikhid's wife prepares him a glass of tea, and then later on in the day, the Chassid says, "The Sheikhid, thanks for your hospitality, but I had asked for tea and I never got it." And it turned out they looked in his room, and he had a cup of tea there, and the cup of tea was finished. And apparently, given the Chassid's deep, deep contemplation, Chassidus, he drank the tea, wasn't even aware that he had done so. Another time, there was a Chassid who was so engrossed in learning Chassidus that he was staying by a certain family's house where he was the Malamed. And generally, they would provide a meal for him. He would come home late from the Beis Medrash after he had been teaching children all day. So he ate the meat, and then after he ate the meat they prepared for him, there was also a bucket with water and a sponge meant for cleaning the kitchen. And he was so engrossed in thinking chassidus that he ended up drinking the water that was meant to clean the kitchen and eating the sponge. The next level of Hezbonus moves more from the intellectual to the experiential, and this level of Hezbonus, this fourth rank of Hezbonus, is called to contemplate to the point that the idea illumines one's mind and heart. This begins with a citation from the Friedrich Rebbe's Idrus Kodesh, Chelek Gimel, on page Tof Kuf Chof Hei, where there the Friedrich Rebbe says, Hezbonus limudi, the studying Hezbonus, the studying contemplation. In Yono, its idea is the Achash Loma des Inuitiv, Vavinoi, Bavana Toiva, Uvasaga Gemura. That after a person studied an idea well and understood it with a good understanding and complete apprehension, Shamevin is Inyan al Boyoi, that the person understands the idea very well, Bidugmas Havanose Vasagose, Besuga de Gemura. In a way that one would concretely understand a concept in Gemara, hine hu mizbonin bo'im b'kenyahu, a person continues to contemplate on that idea, ad sha'asichli meir etzlo, until the idea begins to illuminate by the person. There's sichli leicht by him, saying that in Yiddish, the intellectual idea illuminates the person. The kol ma shu mizbonin yoser, and the more the person contemplates, hine yoser meir lo yasichli, the intellectual idea illuminates them more, to the point that the idea becomes set, becomes fixed within one's mind and heart. Whatever a person studies influences them. But the Friedrich Rebbe is saying that there's a significant difference between the influence of mere study and the influence that an idea has upon a person if they've engaged in intellectual Hezbonus. In the Maimer Moshcheini, Tavshin Aleph, the Friedrich Rebbe says as follows: Efshir liyos shum peula me'eza midat shetia shetove yirak me'es oirus hamidos bli inyan Hezbonus. No emotional experience, no emotion, will have a lasting effect on a person if the emotion is aroused without a contemplative exercise, without there being some intellectual calculus, some intellectual awareness that comes behind the emotion. V'hainu, that is to say, the Asagas Inyan Bilvad, merely knowing, merely apprehending an idea, Afgan Masige Basagotiva, even if you understand it well, Hine Beloy his bonus baze, without contemplating on the idea. Hine Gam in Maven Zebetoiv, even if you understand the idea well. Loitia Mizes Oyus Amidas Amithis, one will not have true arousal of their emotions. The Ine Ella his Sriagshus Lisha Bilvad, and whatever emotional experience one will have will be a temporary emotional experience. Which doesn't lead to any impact, which doesn't lead to any lasting results. Hasaga b'li yizbeninus, apprehension without contemplation. Ein la yisayid musa, it doesn't have any foundation. U'chazireh l'rik, and it's like planting seeds in the ground for nothing. It's like investing and not having any return. L'fi, shemei hasaga zu hine gam imdi hasaga me'ira u'mi u'behira. B'seichel rov, from this intellectual apprehension, even though it may be a very illuminating and shining intellectual apprehension, it won't allow anything to grow. Any intellectual apprehension which doesn't lead to concrete results, even this intellectual understanding is not a true intellectual understanding. And without contemplating with that intellectual understanding, nothing will ultimately grow. The relationship between understanding and emotional or instinctive response, merely apprehending an idea, merely knowing an idea, might lead you to some degree of emotional excitement, but it's not lasting. If one contemplates on the ideas that they've apprehended, that contemplation is, in Yana, the idea of contemplation is, experiencing, staring upon the true nature of the idea you're thinking about. And from this contemplation and lived experience of the idea, not only is it the case that one's intellectual understanding of the idea becomes clear, but moreover, the arousal that one has as a result of their contemplation leads to an excitation of one's emotions and one's instincts in a way that will be lasting and in a way that leads to activity. So here, unlike in the previous three levels, hisbainus is not just about the idea anymore. The first level we saw was one is misbainin ba'utsiyas rav, one contemplates on the letters, one contemplates on the content of the maimer. In the second idea, the second rank, we saw that one begins to say over a given maimer or a given parak of Tanya in their own words. On the third rank, we saw intellectually a person begins thinking about a suya, a big idea in Chassidus, say like Bittul Olamis or his Avos Yishmiayin, Achdus Hashem. One takes that concept and thinks about various maimorim which address the concept, so it's a much more heavy and creative intellectual exercise. But now here, it's not about the intellect anymore, but it's about making a cheshbon tzedek, about contemplating and about evaluating to what extent is the intellectual idea actually impacting me, to what extent is it impacting me as a person. To what extent is the intellectual idea generating an emotional response, or is it leaving me cold and dry? Finally, the fifth rank on the ladder of hisbeinonus is called Hargoshas Hachayus Elokis Shebeinyan, feeling, sensing the divine idea that is behind the idea, feeling the divinity, feeling the divine life force in the idea. The Friedrich Rebbe, the sixth Lubavitcher Rebbe, in his Igros Kedesh Chel Gimel, on page Tov Kuf Chav Vav, page 526, explains this rank of hisbeinonus as follows. He says, hisbeinonus shekodem atfila, the contemplation that one has before davening, in yono hergish chayus ha'inyin shalomat, its idea is feeling the life force behind what it is that one learned. Ki b'hisbeinonus limudi, when it comes to hisbeinonus, the time of study, im hayos or rav, although it's the case that study That is brinus, can be very luminescent, they can have great light. We call makim, call inyana hergesh, their ganzer, geschmack, and gefil, the entire feeling that one has, and that is brinus hu basichli. It's focused on the intellectual understanding. Aval, whereas, bis brinus shekidim atfila, when it comes to the contemplation for davening, hine ha'ikir hu hergesh achayus. What's primary is the feeling of the life force, feeling the mechayus from the minyan, feeling the life force, feeling the life that's behind the idea. This is very cryptic. What does it mean to feel the life, feel the divinity behind the idea? So Rosh Chaim would talk about this. He would say that through the contemplative exercise, one doesn't only feel the intellectual idea, but feels the life force and the divinity in the idea. But he wouldn't explain what this meant. Rav Meir Tzvi Guzman, who is one of Rav Shlomo Chaim's Talmidim, said that he once took a long trip with Rav Shlomo Chaim from Ferchabat to Meiron. So that would be probably a good, solid four-hour drive. And over the course of that drive, although they spoke about many things, one thing which Rav Guzman could not get Rav Shlomo Chaim to talk about was what exactly this level of his Hizbunus is. Meaning to say that there are some places where no advice can be given. If you get there, you'll feel it on your own. Similarly, Rav Moshe Einstein, who is another Talmud of Shlomo Chaim, said there are some things, there are some rinks in Aveda and spiritual worship which you can't explain. There's a piskam from one of the medieval Jewish philosophers, I believe Rav Yedaya Pnini, who said, of Hashem, ilu yedaitiv hoyisiv, if I would know, if I would be able to explain Hashem to you, then I would be him. Meaning to say that it's very difficult for us to explain to Hashem, because we live in a different conceptual universe, in a different conceptual framework. So if Einstein gave the mashal, he said, this is like in the physical reality, let's imagine that somebody has a certain field of vision, somebody can see a certain amount of miles. Now, he can't see beyond that amount of miles with his vision. The only way to, with his field of vision, to actually experience beyond the field of vision, is to walk a few more miles, and then he'll be able to see farther. So, in a similar fashion, when it comes to these Madrigas and Hizbunus, when it comes to these high ranks of Hizbunus, it's insufficient to rely on descriptions from somebody else. You have to work at this Hizbunus yourself, and ultimately, you'll get there. As it says, in Chacham Kebal HaNisayim, no one is as wise as the person who has experience. When trying to illustrate this fifth Madrigan Hizbunus of Hargoshas Chayas Aliki, Shlomo Chaim once told the following story. Once upon a time, in Kostoria, the Rebbe Shah, the fifth Lubavitch Rebbe, was going around with a bottle of very strong mashke, what we call in Lubavitch 99 Sigir, which is, or Zexa 9 Sigir, which is alcohol with either 96% or 99% alcohol volume. Meaning your average bottle of vodka, for comparison, is 40% alcohol by volume, and Zexa 9 Sigir is 96 alcohol by volume. It's very, very intense. When you try drinking it, it burns the tongue. And one shouldn't drink too much of it because one could easily get alcohol poisoning. Whereas if one drinks vodka, one can easily drink an entire bottle of vodka without dying. Or if one has a high enough tolerance and high enough of body weight. Whatever the case may be, so there's this 99 Sigir, or Zex 9 Sigir, which the Rebbe Shah was going around with. He was going around with two bottles, and he gave all the Talmidim a shot of Zex 9 Sigir to drink, and then the Rebbe Shah would say L'chaim with each Talmud. So he consumed a good deal of Zex 9 Sigir. But it seemed like there was no visible effect on the Rebbe Shah. There's a similar story like this about the Tzemach Tzedek. Anyway, so they asked the Rebbe Shab afterwards, how could it be that you're drinking so much alcohol of high content and it doesn't have any effect on you? So Rebbe Shab said, I was contemplating on the following idea. I can understand why it is that Shem Elikim, why it is that divinity as divinity manifests itself in the natural order and the natural reality is the divine substance and essence. But I can't understand why does it Shem Havaya, Hashem, as Hashem expresses himself, transcending reality, is the divine substance and essence. And I was sitting and contemplating on that idea, and therefore the mashke, therefore the alcohol, didn't affect me. To finish, there is a story of Shlomo Chaim, that Shlomo Chaim said that Shlomo Chaim would very often sit in front of the wall in the yeshiva in Kfar Chabad. And he would sit in front of the wall for an hour, 2 hours, for a significant period of time in the act of Hizbunus, in the act of contemplation. Shlomo Chaim said, somebody who's edel, somebody who is a refined person, and sees me being Hizbunin, they'll be very impressed, they'll be very inspired. But somebody who lacks Adelkite will think, who's this crazy guy just sitting there staring at a wall? So let's summarize. On the spiritual path, it's very often the case that spiritual seekers want to climb all the way right away. They want to experience the highest ranks of divinity right away. Or you'll see this in yeshivas, that the Bachrim want to become the Gadol Hador overnight. And that leads to great intensity, and very often it leads them to ultimately falling down along the path. When it comes to Hizboininus, when it comes to contemplation on Hasidic ideas, and contemplation is a preparation for tefillah, one could think that they'll become a great contemplative, they'll become a great meditator overnight. But that's usually not the case. And the Shlomo Chaim Kesselman, the great Mashpia, offered five different ranks, five different stages of Hizboininus for those who are trying to climb the ladder of tefillah, the Sulam Musav Arza, as Tzil is described in Parsva Yitzay. Those who are trying to walk along the Chabad contemplative path. So he said the first rank, the first level in Hizboininus is Hizboininus Be'osiyos HaRav, contemplating the letters of the Master, meaning contemplating on the letters that were given. So let's say that one is contemplating on a chapter of Tanya. Then one would think through what's said in that chapter of Tanya, letter by letter. Obviously, they're imagining it, they're not just thinking about the letters, but they're thinking about what the letters mean, what the ideas mean. But they're thinking through Tanya, thinking through the words of Tanya, and then translating the ideas to themselves in their mind. Now, of course, one shouldn't only do that. Shlomo Chaim said that one should also engage in the Bechein. Try and think, what's the takeaway? How does this idea impact my life? And that question of impact could be true whether we're talking about a simpler idea in Tanya or whether we're talking about very abstract ideas in philosophy or psychology, often discussed in the more advanced Maamar of Rebbeim, such as the Rebbe Rashab. Next level of Hizboininus is not thinking about the words themselves, but thinking about the ideas behind the words. Saying the idea over to yourself in your own words. Internalizing the text. And this would be, say, going over a Perek of Tanya, or going over a Maimer, in the order of the Perek of Tanya, in the order of the Maimer, this time saying it in your own words. The next step, the next level of advance in Hizboininus is contemplating on an idea in Chassidus. So let's say a person wanted to contemplate on the idea of tshuva, on the idea of returning to Hashem. So they might think of sections in Igeres HaTshuva of the Alter Rebbe in Tanya Perek Gimel. They might think, or rather Tanya Chelek Gimel. They might think of Mitzvah Vidui U'Tshuva in the Sefer Derech Mitzvah Secha. They might think of Shuv Yisrael Renat, a famous mimer of the Rebbe Rashab, and they would string these, or they might think of Sichas and Chelek Lamed Tes of the Rebbe, and then they would string these various sources together to come up with their own unique take on Avedas HaTshuva. Or let's say somebody wants to think about the idea of Achdus Hashem, about Hashem's unity, a very central concept in Chassidus. So here one might think about Tanya Perakim Chof, Chof Aleph and Chof Beis, which talk about Achdus Hashem. One might then think of Perak Mem Ches in Tanya. One might think of Shai Yichud V'Amuna, the second Chilik of Tanya. One might think of Igeres Chof Vav in Tanya. One might think of mitzvahs Achdus Hashem and Amaretz Likus and Derech Mitzachon, Cherish Mitzvah Tfilah Perek Lamed Tes. Meaning one could string together all sorts of sources in Chassidus which talk about the idea of Achdus Hashem, and thereby generate a proper contemplative approach in Avedas Tfilah. And this third level, is intellectually the most advanced. But even though this has all been Hizboininus, contemplation in an intellectual mode, ultimately, the Hizboininus is meant to have an emotional impact. So the fourth level is engaging in Hizboininus, engaging in contemplation on these ideas, and trying to test, trying to understand and to ask oneself, to what extent are these ideas that I'm being Hizboininus on actually impacting me? And finally, the fifth level is what the Friedrich Rebbe referred to as Hargoshas Chayus Eliki, feeling the divine life force behind the ideas as one contemplates. And the Rosh Hashanah said this is a level of Hizbeinus, which somebody won't necessarily be able to articulate. If you're there, you're there. If you've experienced it, you've experienced it. And if you haven't experienced it, you haven't experienced it. And the way to get there is engaging in the Aveda, engaging in the work of the other levels of Hizbeinus, and then ultimately one can hope to reach this highest level of, through the contemplative exercise, feeling the divinity which underlies the idea.